What's my subscription to the New York Times have me doing this week? Preparing a strawberry pretzel pie. Solving spelling bee with no hints. Planning a trip to one of the 52 best places to go. Getting to the bottom of the big pants trend.
Whoa.
And I'm finally replacing my vacuum with a recommendation I can trust. What will your subscription to the Times have you do? Why not find out? With our best offer, go to nytimes.com/subscribe.
From the New York Times, I'm Michael Barbaro. This is The Daily. When Louisiana's stay-at-home order expires today, restaurants across the state can begin allowing customers back inside at their own discretion. That decision now lies with restaurant owners like Jasmine Lambrage. It's Friday, May 15th.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, good. You sound great right now.
Wonderful, wonderful. Hi, I'm Jasmine Lambrage.
Hi, Jasmine. I'm Michael Barbaro.
Hi, nice to meet you this way.
Very nice to meet you this way. Where exactly am I reaching you?
I am at the Bullfish Bar Plus Kitchen here in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
That's your restaurant?
Yes.
So how long have you lived in Baton Rouge?
Me personally, about 17 years.
Mm-hmm.
My husband has been here over 20 years. And we have two girls, two beautiful girls. Gabby, she's turning 11 next month. And we have our gorgeous Angel. She's 9.
How did you and your husband meet?
It's an old love story. We met in school. I was in dental hygiene school and he was in culinary school. And he was working at that cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
My friend said that they have good food over there and they wanted to go. And so we went over there and he was a quiet guy in the corner doing his own thing. I said, excuse me, what do you have here that is good and healthy that I can eat?
Mm-hmm.
And he looks up and he said, nothing is good enough for you.
Oh, geez.
And then I turned to walk away and he said, but if you come back tomorrow, I'll make something for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I just kind of smiled and said, no, thank you. And I had a few friends who are like, yes, we're coming back tomorrow. So the next day he made something for me. He made stir fry. And my friends, I had one of my crazy friends. She said, I said, I'm not going to eat. I don't know if this guy is some kind of psycho or crazy and he's going to put something in my food. She's like, well, I'm going to eat. If nothing happens to me in a few minutes, then you can try it. So that's what happened. And he came back and asked, how was everything? I said, it was good. And then we started talking then. Then he said, I'm going to be his wife. And I said, I'm sorry. That's not going to happen. You know, and he said, well, he's a praying man. He always gets his heart desire. And yes, 10 years later, we ended up married.
So when you two met, you were a dental hygienist student. He was training to be a chef.
Yes.
And so how did you end up in the food industry?
Well, growing up, my mom always cooked, you know, for many people. So it was always a passion. I grew up cooking also with mom and just family and aunts. That was just something we did. And then Chef Angel, my husband, you know, he was the executive corporate chef that started Voodoo Barbecue and Grill. Mm-hmm. Which is a restaurant here in the South. And he was known as the pit master.
Mm-hmm.
And what we did, we started Jazz City then. Jazz City was a catering company. And he was like, well, this is what I love to do. And we wanted to do something. We have two young kids. We know that, you know, you can work hard for anyone and everyone. But really, if you want to leave that, create something for your family, you need to create something so that it can stay down and pass down for generation and generations and possibly grow. And that is our goal, is to have it grow and flourish. And we ended up here at the Bullfish.
Mm-hmm.
And Bowfish was already, it was a restaurant previously owned by someone else. And when we came here, we made it our own by bringing new menu items. And this is the only place you can come in Louisiana and find an authentic Caribbean and Southern fusion cuisine. What he's done, what Chef has mastered, he's taken the fresh herbs and that we have in the Caribbean, and then he's merged it with the wonderful spices that we have here in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And he does a fusion of jerk fish and a Southern barbecue shrimp. Yes. And the paella, you know, Chef makes the paella with, you know, he used scallops and the crawfish, which is from Louisiana. He infuses that with the andouille sausage, and then he puts the shrimp in there and the crab meat. And so it's just the different twist that he puts on all of the dishes. It's just magic in your mouth. And I don't know if you heard the music in the background a little. We kind of use a lot of Caribbean kind of music from different parts of the Caribbean, and we play different musics from here. The vibe is just so, I don't need a passport, but I can get away here. Does that make sense?
It's funny. You keep calling your husband Chef. Is that how you refer to him?
At work, we keep it professional. At home, well, when we get in the car, it's honey. But when we're at work, we refer to each other. I refer to him as Chef, and he would just say whatever he has to say to me, or, okay, yes, ma'am, and that would be it.
Got it.
Yes.
And when did you take over the restaurant?
That was last year, 2019, May 22nd, 2019.
Okay. So just about a year ago.
Yes. And for this restaurant, the Bowfish, it is personal for us because our home is connected to the Bowfish.
Huh.
Yes. So that's why this pandemic, I personally have spent many nights not sleeping because I know our home is connected to it. It's not like we have 5, 6, 7, 20 locations. This is all we have. In our home, we have two kids. My daughter, my oldest, Gabby, she's autistic. I don't know what's going to happen, but for now, she's depending on us to care for her. So as she grows, the home is, before we committed our home to the Bowfish, was part of the security blanket that we had. In the event something happened, she would have that.
Tell me what you mean when you say that your home is connected to Bowfish. You mean physically or emotionally or what?
Well, whenever you get a loan, you have to give some kind of guarantee, like a personal guarantee. And that's what we did. You know, we took that leap of faith and decided that we were going to put 100% in here to make it work. So we have to make the Bowfish work.
So if something were to happen to the restaurant, it would mean potentially losing your home.
Yes.
And it sounds like that house is something you plan on passing on to your daughter who's autistic.
Yes. Well, both of our girls, but we know her, at least we can have somewhere for her in case she needed somewhere to be. And then we can have that there for her. That is something that always gets me emotional talking about because I'm sorry.
I understand.
It's you know, and she's standing in front of me looking at me now, and we want to do whatever it takes to make it work. You know, we just have to make it work. So when this pandemic started, it really gave us a scare. Because if we're not able to pay for everything and we default on our loan, well, we understood the consequences, you know.
Was there a moment when you felt that you had really kind of made it with this place, having bought it and started to make it your own?
Yes. About a month before the pandemic, we're like, yeah, this was a good choice. My husband and I, we usually go early morning service for church. And afterwards, we came here for brunch. And then before we were open, we had people waiting outside for us.
Wow.
It was wonderful. And we're like, okay, wow, this is really going to work. This is really working. And wow, honey, this is our baby. And we're going to grow it. And we're going to be able to pay up the loan. And we're going to be able to just blow this thing out of the park. And then the pandemic started, and yes.
When did you first start to notice that the pandemic was impacting the restaurant?
Okay, early March, because it was February, was good with Valentine's Day. Early March was when everything started changing. Mm-hmm. And as March went on, the governor shut down the state. This is when, you know, you started losing staff members saying they're not coming out.
Huh.
I mean, you cannot blame them. We also started doing curbside delivery, and we were doing social media posts and putting up signs, handwritten signs, offering discounts, you know, letting people know that curbside pickup is available, just getting different yard signs made.
So you have to put up signs in the windows or outside telling people, we're still around. You just need to call in. Now.
Yes, yes, yes. And then about maybe the second week after the state was closed, we would be lucky if we got two people that would call for curbside pickup. And we would just be sitting here the entire day, 11 to 8, and there's no one that would come by or no one that would call. So then I started calling the restaurant phone a couple of times to make sure the phone was working because it never rang. We were there for hours.
So you called the restaurant's main number with your cell phone just to see if it was working?
Yes.
Wow.
And, you know, I started reaching out to third party delivery providers to see if I can sign up with them, like Uber Eats and Waiter mm-hmm. and DoorDash and Chow Now. And they're charging, some of them are charging from 25 to 35%.
Per order.
Yeah, that's your food cost. Yes.
Mm.
You know, and in addition to that, we're not able to buy in bulk anymore because we've wasted so much food. We've thrown away so much stuff. So now right. we're having to go ourselves, Chef and I, to different mom and pop stores that are open. And we're having to purchase items. Of course, now you're paying more money for them because you're not buying the same quantity anymore. And you're buying from a local retailer. So, you know, and then we have a bar here and no one was coming out to drink anymore. So that went away. So, yeah, the pandemic, you know, it's been hard on us.
Mm-hmm. I'm so sorry.
Yes.
So with these delivery apps, these new sources of orders, how much money do you make off of any individual customer, kind of percentage-wise?
Right now you don't, because the fact that we're buying things from not just local distributors, but smaller volume. We're buying things in smaller volume. So our profit margin is smaller. So we're basically not making anything. You're keeping the doors open, but you're not making anything from it.
Mm. Can you give us a sense of where your daughters have been throughout this period? At what point was their schooling interrupted?
Maybe March. Aisha, when did school close? March or April? Okay, school closed in March.
Mm-hmm.
I still do bring my two girls so I can homeschool them because they are out of school. So I use a corner of the restaurant and I do schooling there for my girls. But it was a challenge. The change was not welcomed and open for the girls, especially mm-hmm. the oldest, Gabby.
What do you mean?
You know, with autism, everything has to be, you need to have something, everything scheduled and everything has a plan. You need to follow through. And this whole pandemic kind of just went haywire for her in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
She was not sleeping. She was more agitated. And my youngest, Angel, she kept saying she wanted to go back to school. So I had to find other ways to help them. So.
Mm-hmm. And Jasmine, I think I hear your daughters in the background. Is that right?
Yes, you do.
Do you think there was a point where your daughters picked up on what has been happening for you and your husband, but beyond the stresses that they're experiencing, you know, from not being at school and social distancing, that they understood that you and your husband are struggling with this business and struggling financially?
I think so. There is one incident, my daughter, my youngest, she, you know, she gets allowance and
mm-hmm.
someone gives her money or whatever, and she saved the money. And One day she wrote a note and then she left a note on the bed. On my bed, I was taking a bath and I came out and she had a note saying that, Mom, I know you and Dad are working really hard and things are really tough. I have some money saved. I hope this helps for you to pay for stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yes. That was hard. That was hard.
How old is this daughter who left you?
Angel was 8 when she did that. She just turned 9 in April. So she had a pandemic birthday.
Can I ask how much she gave you?
I think it was like $57 she had.
Wow. And what did you do with it?
I still have it saved. I still have it there. I try not to use it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just such a touching moment. And just to see, you know, that kids realize more than you let them know. And knowing that they're here like almost every single day with me. And
they see everything.
Yes.
How bad are things, financially speaking, right now?
Not close at all to where we want to be. Not good at all. Not good at all. We have applied for a lot of, you know, small business loans, and we're just waiting to hear back.
Have you been able to cover all the payments that you owe to the bank?
I haven't. I think finance is one of the things people don't like to talk about, but I haven't been able to meet a lot. I've had to ask for abatements. So mm-hmm. We'll see what happens.
I mean, do you think there's a situation that you could imagine using that money from your youngest daughter, that $57?
I don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's hers. Even though she gave it to me, it's hers. I don't want to.
Right.
I'm just afraid to even think about
mm-hmm.
a situation like that.
We'll be right back.
My name is Jasmine Ulloa, and I'm a national politics reporter for The New York Times. I grew up in Texas, on the border with Mexico, and I've been reporting in the region since I was in high school. Now I travel the country looking for stories and voices that really capture what immigration and the nation's demographic changes mean for people. What I keep encountering is that voters don't fall into neat ideological boxes on this very volatile issue. There's a lot of gray, and that's where I feel the most interesting stories are. I'm trying to bring that complexity and nuance to our audience, especially in such a critical election year. And that's really what all of my colleagues on the politics team and every journalist at The New York Times is aiming to do. Our mission is to help you understand the world, no matter how complicated it might be. If you want to support this mission, consider subscribing to The New York Times. You can do that at nytimes.com/subscribe.
Jasmine, for listeners who don't know what the rules are in Louisiana, what was announced earlier this week?
Well, restaurants commencing Friday, restaurants can be open for 25% of the capacity.
So you can seat up to 25% of what would normally fit inside
yes.
the restaurant. So how many people do you think that is?
Well, we can seat about 90 people comfortably in here.
Mm-hmm.
And so about 25% of that now is what we're allowed to do.
So if you can only put, 20 or so people inside, can you make money?
I don't see how that's going to happen, to be honest mm-hmm. with you, because 20%, having 20% of people inside the business is not enough to sustain, and I don't know how long that's going to go on for.
Right.
So it's hard. It's a hard thing to digest right now. But even.
But you have decided that you're going to let people back inside.
Honestly, me personally, no. So it is still an open debate. We actually, after I'm done with this interview, we're going to sit down and weigh our options, the pros and the cons, and see if it's something that we want to do.
Can I ask you what you see as the cons and the pros?
Yeah, the pros that, you know, we'll have 25% more revenue than what we're seeing now. And then the cons is knowing that someone will, I'm afraid that, oh my God, somebody's going to come out and they're a carrier of COVID-19 and they affect somebody else. Mm-hmm. So I have no way of controlling that.
Have you heard from customers about their opinions on whether it's time to go back inside the restaurant?
Yes, I have. I've had mixed reviews.
Mm-hmm.
We tend to ask customers whenever they're picking up or are they ready for everything to open back up? That's normally the question we would ask.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that I'm getting a more no's than yes, though, in my opinion.
Mm.
Yes.
Those who have told you, Jasmine, that they do want to come out, what did they say is their reason for wanting to come out, to come back and eat in a restaurant?
They want to get out of the house. You know, sometimes it's just the fact that you cannot do something makes you want to do it.
Yes, yes. The forbidden fruit, yes.
Yes, my point, that's exactly. Like, oh, you're telling me I cannot eat this. Okay, I'm going to be. So, yeah, so that's what I feel I'm getting.
I wonder for you, if you didn't run a restaurant, would you go out and eat right now? Would you walk into a restaurant, sit down, order food?
I would probably go out on a weekday because weekdays are usually less busy because I have a child that has a compromised immune system. So I'm usually very careful to go out. I don't want to take something home to her. So that would be another reason that I personally will not go out. And if I did go out, minus my daughter's situation, I would have definitely found a seat, asked to be seated in the area that is far away from everybody else.
I mean, it's interesting to hear you say that, that you wouldn't want to go to a restaurant unless it was specifically at a slow time because of the health of your daughter, because you're talking about yourself reopening a restaurant. So it's quite a weird conundrum.
Yes, but it's honest.
I just want to make sure I understand which of your daughters is immunocompromised.
Gabby is.
Is that the daughter who is autistic?
Yes, because she was a former premature baby. I ruptured at 14 weeks when I was pregnant with her. And she had a lot of health challenges.
Mm-hmm.
They said, you know, that Gabby would never walk, talk, see, or hear. She was not viable. She does not have any viability of life, and that she would never make it out of the hospital alive. You know, we were told that we were making a mistake for her. She coded and was even pronounced, and she came back with, you know, and she had a trach before, and she was on a ventilator before. She was on oxygen for almost the first 4 years of her life. You know, she started talking late, walking late, and she had to do therapy, and you know, she had a walker. So she had a lot of challenges to see where she is now and where she came from. So I'm always careful, you know, a typical cold for you and I is just a cold. But for her, it can lead to pneumonia, or we've lost her. We've had to stop breathing a couple times and nothing. I don't even know how to explain that.
Mm. Given your daughter's health, are you worried that you're going to basically be in the kind of situation it sounds like you're afraid of kind of all the time, because people are going to be coming into your restaurant and they could potentially get you sick and you could potentially get your daughter sick?
Yes. You know, I don't know what I would do if I find myself bringing something to my child. So I find myself in a very difficult position as a business owner.
That would be very hard to live with. I understand.
Yes. You know,
I mean, it sounds like that has to be weighing on you as you're making this decision?
Yes, it is. It is. It is. This is personal. This is not like, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to open and make the money. It's not that situation for me. I have to be careful for, and I am responsible for, and I'm also responsible for my customers, making sure they have the best experience. And I'm also responsible for my team that are coming to work. So,
and you're also responsible for that house.
Yes.
That is connected to this restaurant.
Yes.
Yeah.
So my hands are tied. Like, yes. Yes. I'm just in a bind. Yeah, I'm just in a bind right now. And say hi, Gabby.
Hi.
Hi, Gabby.
Say hi. It's okay.
Hi.
Oh, I want to see you on the video. Okay. Nice to meet you, Gabby.
Can you see her? I don't know how this works.
Mm-hmm. I can see her. Yeah, she's got a leopard pattern sweater
yes.
on.
Yes. Are you going to talk?
Hi.
Hi. Gabby is waving.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Your mom was just telling us about you. She loves you.
Yes. Yeah.
She loves you very much.
I do. I love you, Gab.
I love you too.
Okay, Mom. Can I call me finish?
Well, that was a nice gift.
Yes, she walked up, so. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just give me a sec. Oof.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean that. So
this is no, I,
hence the reason why I'm torn up. For someone that was 1 pound, 3 ounces when she was born, she's beautiful. She's doing so well. And then this is so scary.
Yeah.
This is so scary, you know, and then it's a hard decision. We don't open up then to get customers to come in. We're putting our house more at risk. We open up and then something happens. Then I'm putting my child's life at risk. I don't even want to be me right now.
Yep. I'm going to be really eager. We're all going to be very eager to understand what decision you make. And I want you to know that we really enjoy getting to know you and talking to you. And we're rooting for you and for your family.
Thank you. Thank you so very much. Thank you.
Thank you. And please give our best to your husband and to the rest of your family.
Thank you.
Bye. Gabby. Bye,
Gabby. Bye. Say bye.
Bye.
Okay, thank you guys.
Bye.
On Thursday night, after we spoke, Jasmine, her husband, and their staff decided that they would reopen their restaurant for indoor dining, starting on Tuesday. We'll be right back. Here's what else you need to know today.
Good morning, Chairwoman Eshoo and Ranking Member Burgess and distinguished members of the subcommittee. I am Dr. Rick Bright, a career public servant and a scientist who has spent 25 years of my career focused on addressing pandemic outbreaks.
In testimony before the House on Thursday, a whistleblower who was fired as head of a federal research agency said that the Trump administration failed to heed his warnings about the shortage of medical supplies in the national stockpile and that Americans died as a result.
Congresswoman, we've known for quite some time that our stockpile is insufficient in having those critical personal protective equipment. So once this virus began spreading and became known to be a threat, I began pushing urgently in January, along with some industry colleagues as well. And those urges, those alarms were not responded to with action.
his testimony marked the first time that a federal scientist has gone before Congress and openly accused the Trump administration of endangering American lives by bungling its response to the coronavirus.
Without better planning, 2020 could be the darkest winter in modern history.
And Republican Senator Richard Burr of North Carolina, the chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, temporarily stepped down on Thursday amid an FBI investigation into whether he sold hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of stocks using non-public information about the coronavirus that he learned during a Senate briefing. Over the past few days, the FBI has seized Burr's cell phone and searched his electronic records, suggesting that Burr may be in serious legal jeopardy. The Daily is made by Theo Balcom, Andy Mills, Lisa Tobin, Rachel Quester, Lindsay Garrison, Annie Brown, Claire Tennisketter, Paige Cowett, Michael Simon Johnson, Brad Fisher, Larissa Anderson, Wendy Dorr, Chris Wood, Jessica Chung, Stella Tan, Alexandra Lee Young, Jonathan Wolf, Lisa Chow, Eric Krupke, Mark George, Luke Vanderplug, Adiza Egan, Kelly Prime, Julia Longoria, Sindhu Yanasambandan, MJ Davis Lynn, Austin Mitchell, Sayer Cavedo, Nina Patuk, Dan Powell, Dave Shaw, Sydney Harper, Daniel Guimet, Hans Buto, Robert Jimison, Mike Benoit, Bianca Gaver, and Asta Chaturvedi. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Sam Dolnick, Michaela Bouchard, Lauren Jackson, Julia Simon, Mahima Chablani, and Nora Keller. That's it for The Daily. I'm Michael Barbaro. See you on Monday.